Welcome to this episode of the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. I'm Lance Carter. Today's guests are Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard, the brains, the bloody gory brains, behind The Cabin in the Woods. Yes, Joss Whedon! Drew directed the film that both he and Joss wrote, and even though I'm not the biggest fan of horror films, Cabin in the Woods rocked. Yeah, I mean, it takes every horror movie cliche and totally gives it the finger. Trust me, I promise you're going to want to see this movie. It's really great. And I can't believe I got to be in the same room as Joss Whedon. Anyway, the guys talk about making the film and what inspired the story. They talk about monsters and, you know, it's such a fun interview. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. I really do appreciate it when you support the advertisers. Every little click does help. You would be amazed. It's what keeps this website afloat. And don't forget that we also sell casting director and agent mailing labels and have a bunch of other cool actor services available and other cool interviews too. You can check all of that out on the site, dailyactor.com. And now, here's Joss and Drew.
As great lovers of genre, both of you, how much of this movie comes from elements that growing up you would watch me and go, oh, I wish it would go there, or I wish it would twist this instead of doing this thing?
I think everything we write is an element of that. We only write the things that we want to see and haven't seen yet. And occasionally we write the things that we have seen.
Right, wanted to play with.
Yeah, yeah, and really liked. But, you know, I don't remember as a kid going, you know what I wish is that there would be this whole structure around a horror movie. I just remember going, I'm really scared. It's awesome.
You kind of have a reputation for killing characters. So a horror movie kind of seems like a natural movie for you to write or work on. And you as well, Drew, since you've written a lot of Joss's shows. Is that something that you guys have been looking to do for a while, a horror movie?
I think, you know, we like killing characters. I think we're ready to step it up and kill actual people. Sort of a Leopold and Loeb thing. Should I be saying that into tape recorder?
Well, that's the obvious next meta step, is to just full on kill.
That's right.
I do not love for to kill people. I love the people. The point of this movie, I think to a large extent, was, no, I don't love actual people. I mean the people that we write.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Let's clarify that.
I don't love drifters, so it's going to be okay. I'm not going to freak out at the last minute. You know, I just, you know, part of this movie was definitely about the idea that people are not expendable, and that as a culture, for our own entertainment, we tend to assume that they are. And although I absolutely love horror movies and always have, I love them most when I really, really care about the people who are in dire trouble. And with the exception of Alien, I think.
Alien. You don't care about the people in Alien?
It's not that I don't care about them. It's that I was very frightened by that movie because they didn't care about each other. They didn't. I didn't think they were going to band together and fight back. I thought, these guys will sell each other down the river in a heartbeat. That actually freaked me out almost more than the Geiger stuff.
The Thing has the same problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But actually, but in The Thing, I think it's part of the structure.
No, I love it.
Because
I mean,
it's who goes there. I disagree with you. I love that. The parallel, yeah.
I love when they turn on each other.
You guys have, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys have a Thing reference near the end of the film where you're showing like all the other scenarios that have failed.
Listen.
And you... Oh, no, yeah. I guess that's a bit of a spoiler. I just retract that.
It's going to be like the Nixon tapes. She's just missing.
What he's mentioning, there's a little bit of Joe Dante in this film. Joe Dante made that Bugs Bunny film where they go into the supermarket and there's every monster from the 50s.
You know, I don't think I saw.
Yeah, I mean,
but definitely.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good. This is, and certainly Joe Dante is an influence. I mean,
yeah.
This movie is very much about our love of the entire genre. And so, almost every horror movie that we've ever seen is an influence on this movie in one way or another.
I think Joe Dante, though, did have a great flair for riding absurdity.
Yes.
Just enough. Occasionally it would tip over, but and if it does, you're going to lose people a little bit. But there is, a sort of an absurd integrity to this that has a little bit of that Dante flavor, which I had not thought about, but he's definitely in there.
I think one of the great things about this movie is that you have, obviously, the typical teenagers or college students in a horror environment, but then you're introduced to these other guys. The Hadley and Citizen, is that Citizen mm-hmm. characters?
Yes.
Were they always introduced into the movie that early, or was this something that you guys talked about maybe holding back on?
No, that was, I mean, when I first heard, this was Joss's original idea, and it was in that first conversation. You said, this is how we're going to start the movie, and we're going to start the movie in the exact opposite way that all other horror movies start. And as soon as he said that, I just got it. Like, okay, I get the tone. I get what this movie is. We sort of say what this movie is in the first 5 minutes so people can get a sense that this is not going to be your average movie.
Did it start with the cabin? I mean, I love that. I'm talking about just the, you know, it's such a generic title, right? You could put anything on it. Did it kind of start with the cabin, or the scientist, the control room, the puppet masters, was that a first thought?
Puppet Masters has already been used as a title.
Yes. And,
no, it was it was always going to be the cabin because it was, you know, it was iconic to us. And not just because of Evil Dead, but not because of Evil Dead.
How much female empowerment was it important to have in the Jules and Dana characters?
That's really his thing. You know, I don't get that whole women's thing. Those feminazis, as I call them. You know, it was important for the characters to have integrity and to pretty much leave it at that. You know, it wasn't. This is not a movie about gender, and you know, and oddly enough, I've seen the movie several times. There is no adolescent girl with superpowers. It's weird for me, but I'm
You're
dealing with it.
Close enough.
Yeah, there is actually. There is. No, it is not, you know, a text about that. It is just, you know, making sure that everybody is a, you know, a human being with integrity across the board.
During the process, is there anything that either of you fight for or hated arguments and who always wins, or how does that, you know...
No, I mean, somebody else asked me that, and I couldn't remember any specifics. I'm sure we did argue, but...
No, we didn't!
I mean, but passion always won, you know? Yeah. Like, if whoever felt strongly about it.
Yeah, no, I was trying to remember an actual example of us, but it's, you know, it's weirdly came so much from both of us, it's like... you know, you may have some arguments about raising a child, but you both made it. It's your child. You don't go, oh, it's just, it doesn't really feel like my son. No way.
My brother sent me a drunken text last night as he was celebrating Buffy's 15th anniversary, so he says thank you, and I echo that. But can you tell me what the silver lining was for both of you having this film come out so, you know, far after you had made it? I mean, looking on the bright side, what gave it?
Well, we're celebrating its 15th anniversary as well.
Your brother texted me too.
You know, for me, the advantage is simply that, you know, you're not busy trying to just dial in the last bits of it. You're not looking at it fresh and going, wait, we did. You know, because sort of the pain of childbirth is somewhat forgotten, and it's sort of all of this is just a big gift.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, it's felt like, you know, everything happens for a reason, and this everything has worked out for the best here. You know, we have a studio that loves this movie and is behind us 100%. You know, our actors are turning out to be huge superstars, whether they were not when we cast them. And so, you know, we keep saying, you know, be careful what you worry about. Like, this is actually the best possible thing that could have happened to us. So, we're just happy. We're happy to be here.
When the bright switched over to the Lionsgate, did you have a chance to go back and did you guys go ahead and tinker with the movie at all, or is it?
No, I was worried that they, you know, whenever there's a shift in management, you worry that they're especially on a film like this, you know, you worry that they may not see what you're trying to do and they may make us change something. And to Lionsgate's credit, they saw it and they said, no, don't change the frame.
But I mean, is there anything personal that you, after having...
No, I mean, we locked it. You know, luckily, you know, they let us do what we wanted to do. And so when we locked it, we said, this is it. This is what the movie is. And it was just more about protecting that. But, you know, Lionsgate was so supportive, we didn't even have to protect anything.
I know. Really they like nice. It way better than we do.
What inspired the story? How long has the story been festering in your head?
The story itself really just sort of popped out. And I was like, you know, one of those people who doesn't know they're pregnant. And
that's why my stomach hurt.
One of the sad
prom
people.
Bathroom.
Yeah. Prom bathroom. The sequel. But, and then, because, it, you know, it's so clearly the kind of thing that we love, which is, you know, true horror with, you know, a cold eye towards, well, what is that about at the same time as we're in the thick of it? And then once the idea just sort of came, we spent, it was years, I mean, before we actually sat down and did it. But that was, you know, sort of what made it so easy to do when we finally did, because it just, we bandied back and forth. You know, it would be hilarious. You know, it would be fun. Oh, I wish we could. And this is an entire movie of I Wish We Could. It's two raging ids enjoying themselves for 90 minutes.
Do you think the movie will challenge other horror filmmakers to think a little more outside the box? Because there is kind of this sense of this movie dropping the mic and walking away. It's like, there it is, guys, balls in your corner.
Try not to be more articulate than us. Yeah. Where's my handlebars? I'm scared.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no. You know what? We just wanted to make a horror movie that people would really, really enjoy. And I don't see this as like a watershed movie. And maybe that, you know, I just see it as if people have a great time, it's not going to make them go, well, now I think differently about loving horror. I still love it. And other filmmakers are going to do, you know, something that we could never have thought of and didn't expect, and that's going to be, you know, that's what I'm waiting for. It's not an answer to this, it's a new question.
Your dialogue is so distinct. We even hear it in some of the Avengers spots, like we've got an army, we've got a hall. How do you apply that sensibility to the different genres you do?
I talk. Other people like to talk. I talk. We talking is normal. No, wait. I didn't actually answer that one. She's like, that sounds like him.
I like the way the zombie.
Wait, I'm sorry. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. It's a blessing and a curse to have your style recognized. You know, part of the great thing about running a TV show is that you get a bunch of people together who, in both influence it and can echo it, and so that, you know, Drew and I, when we write, we speak each other's language. There's no like, oh, that's clearly true, that's clear to me. There's a couple things that I recognize as clearly coming from one or the other, but, you know, it's the same voice. Ultimately, I don't want people to hear my voice. I don't want people to think about what we wrote. I want them to go, oh, what's going to happen to Marty? you don't want the distance that brings. But
we're still us.
Yeah, we are. You're every right, day so. I wake up and I'm just I look in the mirror, I'm like, God damn, I'm still not the Coen brothers. I'm not even a brother.
I was just going to say the way the zombie always cocked his head, and it made me realize there's like an attention to detail that you're giving all the characters, all the monsters.
The amount of time I spent working on the head cock. You just totally made my day that you noticed that. Because we actually had meetings where the meeting is zombie movement meeting. And when that's your job and you see that on the schedule, you realize you have a pretty good life.
could you maybe just tell us how much is left on the Avengers to finish it?
Oh yeah, we're picture locked. We're just finishing. We're doing the sound mix and finishing effects. In about a month, I will actually just push it away from me and die of old age.
Thank you so much, guys, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thank you once again for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.